Oral questions by members.
Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Every member in this House knows that some of the most tragic outcomes of the pandemic have been in long-term care facilities. We've all seen the heart-wrenching photographs, the stories of separation, and people losing their loved ones who may have died alone. Staff and families in long-term care were extremely relieved, and they felt a glimmer of hope that they were a priority for phase one vaccination. Many long-term care residents in British Columbia have received two doses of the vaccine. And I think it's fair to say that staff, residents, and families expected that everyone in phase one would be receiving two doses. So you can imagine how concerned Wendy Bingham was when the second dose appointment for her mother was abruptly canceled yesterday. It was canceled on the very day that it was scheduled to take place. Wendy writes for her mom, and this is what she said it means, and I quote, "Another 2 months of being locked in their facility with no interaction with the outside world," end quote. Well, I'm sure the Premier and everyone in this place can understand how upsetting a last-minute cancellation of a second vaccination would be. Can the Premier explain why that scheduled second dose was cancelled on the very day it was to have been given, causing additional anxiety and stress for that resident, for the staff, and for their family?
Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much to the honourable member for her question. The member will know, and she acknowledged that, I think, in her question, that long-term care and assisted living facilities have been the top priority in our immunization plan. It's extraordinary that 97% of staff members targeted, of our target, 92% of long-term care residents have received their first dose. And you can see the impact of that. We went from 42 active outbreaks in long-term care homes on January 15th to 6 today. The effectiveness of the dose was laid out in detail in the presentation by Dr. Penny Ballum and Dr. Bonnie Henry on Monday. Member will also know that British Columbia, and indeed all jurisdictions in Canada, it would appear, have changed their position with respect to second dose and the immediacy and the need for the second dose, which has now been extended to 16 weeks. And so that decision, which has been put in place this week, is intended to provide more protection for people across the province to allow us to deal with the pandemic better. I agree with the member, and the member knows this, so we've talked about it on a number of occasions personally, the impact of the pandemic on people in long-term care. And we will be proceeding. People will not have to wait for changes in activity and access in long-term care. Based on the science and the evidence, the provincial health officers and our public health officer team have made decisions about vaccinations. But we will now be moving to improve access for seniors in long-term care, something to my way of thinking is, of course, long overdue for people living through this pandemic in long-term care and in assisted living.
Leader of the Official Opposition on supplement.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate the Health Minister's response. And there's certainly been a great deal of debate across the country about the extension of the second dose. The theme of the question today is about the fact the Minister just said that we will be moving too. Then perhaps there should be a discussion with the very people that are still expecting a second dose, some of the most frail, vulnerable British Columbians. And that situation wasn't the only one. If this government is going to move to a new protocol, the very people who are expecting a second dose, and they were expecting a second dose, should at least have been told. They were promised. They believed it. Let's look at what else happened. People were anxious. They were waiting. They fully expected a second dose. If this government is making a conscious choice to move away from that protocol, they forgot to tell the very people who believed they were going to get a second vaccination. There is inconsistency in British Columbia. Many long-term care residents have received a second dose. There is confusion and inconsistency. On Tuesday, about 200 residents, essential visitors and staff, were scheduled to receive their second vaccination at Orchard Manor and Hawthorne Park. They were scheduled to receive it. Diana Chapp was confused as to why this long-term care home didn't get its second dose. There is an, and I quote, "There is an absolute letdown on a human level, and also the fact that these facilities were one of the last facilities in the area to get the second vaccination," end quote. So again, to the Premier. If the government is moving ahead and making a decision to extend the period of time, the very people, the most vulnerable, frail British Columbians, should at least have been told, and more importantly, this government should have delivered on the promise for Phase 1 residents. Will the Premier commit to doing that today?
Minister of Health.
Honourable Speaker, in British Columbia to date, in thousands of locations around British Columbia, the public health officials have delivered doses to British Columbians, 300,000 doses roughly today. The majority of those doses, of course, are first doses, and all of the people who receive first doses will receive second doses, all of them. The decision that was taken based on the evidence that was presented last week, evidence that has been presented to British Columbians, evidence that was announced publicly, and a decision that was announced publicly on Monday. All of those people received them, but the delay between first and second doses has been extended. And so the decision that was taken was straightforward, based on the science and based on an effort to protect people across British Columbia. I am very proud of the effort to protect people in long-term care and its impact. And I ask the member to review the presentation given both our caucus and to the people of British Columbia on Monday, which lays out in detail the impact of the first dose and why British Columbia and other jurisdictions are proceeding with this approach. We're doing so to help keep people safer, given the supply of vaccine in Canada. We're doing so to ensure that people who are suffering from other aspects of the pandemic may be able of the pandemic and the effect of the pandemic on all aspects of our life in British Columbia can receive relief sooner. And we are doing so in a way that absolutely protects those in long-term care and assisted living. And so I think, Honourable Speaker, I know that the member is correct to advocate for people who have already received their first doses and to make that case on their behalf. They will receive second doses. But to proceed with this and to allow us to expand our immunization campaign based on the science was a decision taken by public health officials and a decision, of course, that I support. It's supported by the National Advisory Committee on immunization, supported by provincial health officers in every jurisdiction in Canada. I think it's the right decision for all of us, and I ask the member to consider supporting it.
Member for Kelowna Mission.
People understand the government has updated its vaccination plan. This isn't really about the updating. This is about promises. This is about expectations. See, people don't understand why some vulnerable seniors who were expecting to receive a second dose had that promise broken. Kyla Coates said her family was so relieved when her 92-year-old grandmother, who suffers from dementia, was given her first shot. And now she's upset as to why her grandmother's home was excluded or singled out from the completion of Phase 1 after she authorized for 42 days consent. The Premier told us that we should, quote, "know the difference between Phase 1 and Phase 2 and Phase 3," end quote. To the Premier, can he explain to Kyla why some vulnerable seniors in Phase 1 received the second dose while the promise was broken to her grandmother?
Minister of Health.
Honourable Speaker, I would say this, that I think the priority that British Columbia has given to people, especially in long-term care, to vulnerable seniors, to vulnerable communities, is clear from the data we release every single day. That has been our priority from the beginning, and that effort is working. look at the evidence to show the impact that has had and the quality of life already in long-term care and will have in the coming weeks as we make changes to improve that quality of life in long-term care. We are, of course, adapting through as we have and as every person listening to us has in the course of this pandemic, our plan to the evidence. That is what I think everyone would expect us to do. The idea that you would make a decision to extend the period between first and second doses and then delay that for weeks and weeks and weeks and months, if that is the opposition's plan, is not the correct approach. The correct approach is to follow the science, to follow the guidance of public health, to make decisions that are in the interest of people, the interest of our most vulnerable, and the interest of people around the province. And that's what Dr. Bonnie Henry has done with this decision, and I encourage the member to support it.
Member for Kelowna Mission on supplemental.
I appreciate the minister's points, but appointments were made, promises were made, and promises were broken. And it's not just seniors who are concerned about this change. Let's talk about Aline, who is a healthcare assistant in long-term care. This is her experience. She says, and I quote, "I received my first COVID-19 vaccine on January 11th and was to get my second dose today, 50 days later. I took the day off work because I also work as an education assistant. My appointment was for 11:25 a.m. I went to the appointment early. There was no one waiting at the screening station. If Fraser Health was able to notify me by text to make an appointment, could they not also have easily sent went out canceling it?" End quote. Does the Premier think it's fair to have healthcare workers arrive to an empty room when they were expecting to get a second dose? Can he promise to do better for healthcare workers?
Minister of Health.
Honourable Speaker, I think it's fair to say that our commitment to supporting healthcare workers is a matter of public record. The member will know in this House, and this came before the pandemic, and it has been in place since the pandemic. It's the reason why essential healthcare workers have been immunized in such large numbers, 56,000 frontline healthcare workers, 20,000 community workers, 39,000 workers in long-term care, thousands more in assisted living and in the community and throughout British Columbia. It indicates our priority in immunization, but it's not just an immunization. When we implemented the single site model in BC more effectively than in any jurisdiction in Canada, it was because we recognize the fundamental inequality that healthcare workers had faced for a decade and a decade before that as a result of policies that had explicitly targeted them. Of course, there are challenges in managing an immunization campaign of this nature, and of course, we feel for everyone involved. I wish everyone in BC would have all their shots right now, but we are dealing with the vaccine supply that's provided by the federal government, with the limitations that our federal government is facing, and we are delivering that based on the evidence directed by public health officials, not by politicians, but by public health officials, in order to keep people as safe as possible during a pandemic. I am proud of those healthcare workers. I am proud to be in a government that has always backed healthcare workers, and we're going to continue to do it.
Member for Saanich North and Islands.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. For my question today, I'd like to start with a quote from Dr. Alicia Sasser Modestino, who's a public policy professor at Northeastern, PhD in economics from Harvard University. This week on CBC, she stated, and I quote, "It's no secret that unless you measure something, you can't really talk about it, and you can't fix it as an issue. Throughout our society, as we are collecting data, there is bias on who we are collecting that data on, how it is interpreted, and who gets studied. If you are excluding groups from your field, then you're going to have that bias creep in, and you're not going to be able to fix the problems that face vulnerable populations. My question through you, Honourable Speaker, is straightforward and to the Premier. Does the Premier agree with this statement?"
Attorney General.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker, and thank you to the member for the thoughtful question. We, as a government, and the parliamentary secretary who is leading this work around the importance of data to inform government decisions, to inform our policies, and the importance of disaggregated race data to understand our blind spots and to understand whether the initiatives that we have put in place are disadvantaging a particular group or are not addressing underlying concerns. So I agree with the quote that what we measure and how we measure it is critically important. And I'll put a caveat on it. We asked the Human Rights Commissioner to advise us about how best to move forward in this area. And she cautioned us, and this is the second and third sentence of her executive summary, by making systemic inequalities in our society visible, data can lead to positive change, some members suggesting. But the same data, used or collected poorly, can reinforce stigmatization of communities, leading to individual and community harm. So we need to collect this data, but we need to do a partnership with communities that are affected to make sure that we avoid the caution that's been given to us by our Human Rights Commissioner to avoid individual and community harm in our efforts to do that. Thanks to the member.
Member for Saanich North and Islands on supplemental.
I thank the Attorney General for that thoughtful response, and I appreciate the agreement with that statement. There is a cost to delay. There's a cost to every moment that there is a delay. And while the government sits on the sidelines with this issue, we have to ask the question, who is paying that cost? Certainly there is cost to this government. No doubt there's going to be cost, increased costs by not fully understanding the picture that's in front of us. However, the real cost of inaction is on those vulnerable populations that my colleague and I have been talking about for weeks. The vulnerable populations that Sasser Modestino refers to being negatively impacted by bias creep and exclusion from decision-informing data sets. As the Attorney General pointed out in his response to my first question, in June of last year, the Premier wrote to the BC Human Rights Commissioner and requested her advice on how to move forward with the collection of race and ethnicity-based data. As the Attorney General pointed out, there was a response from the Human Rights Commissioner. Yet 9 months has passed. 9 months has passed. And every day that's passed since then, there have been negative impacts on British Columbians. I ask my question again through you, Honourable Speaker, to the Premier. What substantial progress has your government made in 9 months that puts us in a different place than when that letter was drafted back in June?
Minister of Health, or Attorney General.
Thank you very much, Honourable Speaker, and thank you again to the member for drawing attention to this very important issue. The member asks what steps our government has taken, and he quotes a Human Rights Commissioner who didn't exist before we were elected into government, and I thank the member and the agreement that we had that reestablished the Human Rights Commissioner so she could give us advice on important issues like this. We've worked with communities across the province to reestablish a Resilience BC Anti-Racism Network. We've almost doubled funding for that program to provide even more support for community groups responding to racism. The member knows we're working to reform the Police Act, fighting anti-Indigenous racism in healthcare. We're stepping up even further with the COVID-19 rise in hate-related incidents that we've seen, especially anti-Asian racism, with $1.9 million in new recovery money to support important community work around that. We've increased multiculturalism grants. We have upcoming anti-racism public education programs. I understand the member wants to move quickly. Everybody wants to move quickly on this, but I also want to emphasize the challenge of moving quickly by yourself and the importance of going a long distance in partnership, which is slower but necessary and critical in this realm. Again, to the Human Rights Commissioner, as experts in their own lives, community members are the ones best equipped to identify priorities and risks in potential data collection projects. This will happen, but we will take the necessary time to ensure the affected groups are direct involved partners in this. And I know the member agrees with that, and I know he understands that. So thank you again for raising this issue.
Member for Fraser-Nicola.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. BC teachers and education staff have kept our schools open and are on the front line every day. They're stressed and afraid, but this government has failed to listen for their calls for additional layers of protection in our schools. Frontline essential workers in our schools need to know if they are being prioritized and when and how they will be vaccinated. AstraZeneca is arriving in British Columbia. We know it must go to a younger cohort, and it comes with an expiration date. To the Premier, on what priority basis will teachers and other educational workers be vaccinated?
Minister of Health.
Honourable Speaker, we were informed, of course, last Friday of the decision by AstraZeneca, the Government of Canada and Health Canada to approve AstraZeneca as a vaccine, as our third vaccine in our immunization efforts in British Columbia and across Canada. We were informed earlier this week, or on the weekend, in fact, that some AstraZeneca would be coming next week. Initially, that AstraZeneca will be used to deal with outbreaks and issues around the province that require immediate attention of vaccination. Our public health officials are putting together a plan based, again, on evidence as to how AstraZeneca and potentially Johnson & Johnson, once that vaccine is approved, and we expect it to be, are used in British Columbia. And it will be, again, be based on evidence, not on a discussion of politics between one group or another, but based on the evidence as assessed by public health officials. And as always, those officials and all of us will go out and present what that evidence is and what the basis for those decisions are, and that will come in the coming weeks.
Member for Fraser-Nicola, supplemental. No? Member for Abbotsford South.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. This pandemic has been with us for a year. A year. And there is no excuse for this government not to give clear answers and detailed information about the order and the criteria for vaccinating priority groups. Our dedicated police and firefighters put themselves at risk of exposure to this virus every single day. We know that AstraZeneca is arriving in British Columbia, and it comes with an expiry date. First responders deserve clarity and a plan for when and how they will be vaccinated. The problem is, they and we have just seen this government break its word, break its promise to the most vulnerable, our seniors. So essential workers, do not trust this government. To the Premier.
Amateur up.
On what priority basis will first responders be vaccinated?
Minister of Health.
Honourable Speaker, for today I'm going to ignore the unbelievably disrespectful statements made about our provincial health officer and our public health team embedded in that question. I'll ignore it today because these issues are so important to people in BC. On January the 17th, we presented our detailed immunization plan, a plan that we have followed effectively and to the letter. On March, earlier this week, on March 1st, having briefed the opposition, many other groups, we presented the next phase of our immunization campaign. Our focus, and we have been clear from the beginning, is to protect those most vulnerable to COVID-19 first, by vaccinating them first. That's why in long-term care, for example, more than 70,000 people have received their first immunizations, and you've seen the effect of that. We said we'd do it, we did it. Well, with respect to assisted living, the same. We said we did it, we did it. We do it, and we did it. with healthcare workers in our acute care settings, the same. For Indigenous people in rural and remote communities, the same. We did it by following public health and by the extraordinary work of public health professionals and healthcare workers around our province. And that continues now. We have laid out our age-based approach with respects to Pfizer and Moderna, meaning that we're going to protect those most vulnerable first, because those who are older are the most vulnerable to severe outcomes from COVID-19. And that is the plan we're going to continue to do. We have a relatively small amount of AstraZeneca coming into the province. We are going to use it to effectively deal with situations and communities in initial stages. We are, of course, going to use all of it. And then we're going to present a plan that's, again, systematic and follows the advice of public health and addresses those who are most vulnerable to COVID-19 and addresses those who are most likely to spread COVID-19. That's the way you would expect a competent, thoughtful province and immunization campaign based on the people who do immunization campaigns every day, who do this work every day, public health officials across BC. I am so proud of them. I am so proud of the work we're doing in this campaign. And I'm so hopeful about its positive impact for people in British Columbia.
Member for Peace River South.
Well, thank you. Let's be clear. This is not about being disrespectful to any health leaders at all. This is about asking questions that the people of British Columbia have, because there have not been clear direction and clear answers given by this government. All we're asking for is a clear criteria and order that the vaccination priorities will be for groups in British Columbia. These people are asking. We all know the pandemic's been here for a year. We've had lots of time to put together a better plan and better priorities and communicate that to the people and to the groups. And especially now, as we've been hearing, with the AstraZeneca vaccine coming, and it has an expiry date. And we're told that it could expire within just a few weeks. So to be told that we'll have a plan in a few weeks when that vaccine expires in a few weeks is cold comfort to many people. What I want to know is which industries will this government actually consider essential? What about those in transportation of our much-needed goods? What, maybe the workers in camps or those in the energy sector? What about our agriculture and food processing workers? Will the Premier today answer that simple question and let these groups know when they will be prioritized?
Minister of Health.
Honourable Speaker, the basis of our immunization campaign throughout has been to protect those most vulnerable first. That fundamental ethical principle has guided us and has been, I believe, given the amount of vaccine we've received from the federal government, extraordinarily effective. We've seen the effectiveness of these vaccines and what they can do in communities. We got word this past weekend about amount of vaccine in British Columbia. Now, the opposition has now mentioned hundreds of thousands of people that they believe should get priority. Of course, we have right now in the month of March, we're going to have probably around 60,000 doses of AstraZeneca, doses that we will use, of course. And the approach here is to lay out an immunization response that's based on the science, that protects those most vulnerable, that takes the most action we possibly can to reduce community spread. That is the approach that has been recommended by our provincial health officer, Dr. Bonnie Henry, the team at the BC CDC, and we're going to continue to follow that approach. And Honorable Speaker, one can play politics and trying to pit groups against groups. I don't think that's where British Columbians are at. I think they overwhelmingly support our approach to protect those most vulnerable first. They are happy that people in long-term care have received doses across this province, more than 90%, Honourable Speaker. They're happy about that, even if it means they don't get their dose yet. We are going to move forward in the same way with this immunization campaign. And I continue to be proud of our public health officials who are putting the people of BC first. If you want to know the principles of this campaign, go back to January 17th,
Back
to December, and see what we said and what we did.
Member for Abbotsford West.
Mr. Speaker, the problem the minister doesn't want to seem to acknowledge, in fact, seems to take great offense at the opposition pointing out, is that when you pull the rug out from under a 90-year-old at the very last minute by denying them the vaccine they were promised, people lose confidence. They stop trusting you. Stephanie Smith of the BCGEU says this, "It's a matter of clarity. Our members work in corrections, supportive housing, childcare. They want to know when their turn will be." Now, the Premier has said nothing, and nothing the minister has said, quite frankly, provides anything approaching clarity despite the passage of time. If the Premier and the minister are prepared to unilaterally change the rules on vaccinations for a 90-year-old in a long-term care facility, how can a childcare worker or a corrections worker have any faith in any of the assurances that the minister purports to make today?
Believe it.
Minister of Health.
Honourable Speaker, I guess the honourable member wishes that we engage in an immunization politics by some sort of political popularity contest. That's not what's happening here. We are protecting those that are most vulnerable first. We laid out our plan on January 17th for phase one. When we announced our plan on March 1st for the next phase of immunizations, we made a significant change between first and second dose, one that was supported by the science. And if the opposition disagrees with the National Advisory Committee on Immunization, if the opposition disagrees with Dr. Bonnie Henry, if the opposition disagrees with Dr. Rekha Gustafson, if the opposition disagrees with public health officials, they of course have every right to make that disagreement clear. But you can have it your way, you can't have it both ways. We support public health. We support an immunization campaign that protects our most vulnerable first. I'm proud of the officials that have put it together, and I'm proud of the effort that's been made by everyone in British Columbia, public health officials and the people of BC, to deal with this pandemic over the last year. And I know they will show the same courage and the same determination in the coming months.
The balance question period.